Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Here we are, July 8th. I hope you all had a really good 4th of July week. It was kind of weird the way the holiday fell this year on a Tuesday, right? So it was all kind of confabulated as to how you did that. A lot of people take that week off. We had company. I was planning to be closed on Monday and Tuesday, but neglected to tell my assistant, Sue, who drives over from Windham, New Hampshire on Mondays, that we would be closed. And so she was here. It actually turned out to work out really well because there's always a lot to do. And she was doing that, and she also kept the doors open. And we did have people coming in and out. So in any case, next year, the 4th of July falls on a Thursday. And I think that's going to be really good because it's easy to do that, like a long weekend. That'll be kind of like the Thanksgiving weekend of the summer next year. But we're still in this year, 2023. Again, today is July 8th, and it's a beautiful summer day here in Keene, New Hampshire, if a little on the humid side. We've had a lot of heat and humidity this week, but very pleasant out there. And I hope you're doing something. Something fun and summery this weekend. So again, you're listening to Wonder Truths, your health from the ground up. My name is Rebecca Becky Montrone. We have a practice here in town, a business called Wondrous Roots. I am a holistic health care practitioner with a degree in holistic nutrition. Holistic nutrition means not a registered dietitian. I look at people from the whole big picture, and holistic nutrition, I would say, is more about looking at nutrition as a fundamental to our health, not just are we getting enough recommended dietary allowance of nutrients, but are we using nutrients to their fullest? Are we using them to our advantage? Are we using them in many cases and many times in therapeutic levels? For good results. So when I say therapeutic, I'm talking about using things, nutrients. There's also another name for that called orthomolecular. Using nutrients in therapeutic form and doses to achieve benefit for prevention of, we would say, disease, and also to remedy and treat and even perhaps cure disease. So anyway, that's where I'm coming from. And our business, our practice here is, I say practice business, we have a shop. I'm also an herbalist and have formulated very many different formulas for using botanical products, botanical ingredients, so herbs, roots, seeds, oils, all kinds of things. We have a beautiful, wonderful skincare line, our Wondrous Skin. And we also have, 150 or more formulas of different herbs and over 250 single herbal extracts. So we've got a lot going on here. And our open door hours are 9:30 to 5, Monday through Friday. We are on the third floor of the wonderful Miller Forge building down on Roxbury Street in Keene, just off Central Square. We have plenty of free parking out there, ample parking, and plenty of handicap accessible spaces. as well as handicap accessible entrance, and we have an elevator. So being on the third floor should not be a problem if you have issues with your mobility. Our number to call us is 603-439-2603. You can also reach out to me from my website, wondrousroots.org. Go to contact us. That comes to my private email, and I will get back to you. We also have another website, shopwondrousroots.com, that you can access directly by typing that in, or you can also I just thought of something totally different and lost my train of thought because I had something up here I want to read for you in a second, and I think I lost it. I'm going to have to find it. But in any case, you can also hit shop from wondrousroots.org at the top, and it will just redirect you to that website. Okay, so with that said, I think that covers the bases. I wanted to put in my newsletter that John Michael DeMay, many of you know, he's been a guest on my radio program for a long time. Oh, here's another bit of intro. So you are listening on Blog Talk Radio, and the call-in number here is 563-999-3478. Again, that's 563-999-3478. You can see that in the newsletter that you opened in order to log into this program, most likely. And the number is right there. You can call and talk to me about anything, off topic, on topic, ask me a question. You can also, I've got my screen open for my email, rebecca.montrone@gmail.com or rebecca@wondrousroots.org if you want to chime in, but you would rather not call and be speaking. You can do that, and I'm going to keep an eye on that. So, I also, to pick up my previous podcasts and whatnot, you can use the same link for the programs in these newsletters, and you can fast forward and rewind. You just have to go to the top. There's a very easily accessible bar there. Also, go to wondrousroots.org radio, and you can click on the icons for either the newsletter that goes with the program and the icon that goes to Blog Talk Radio, and just re-listen or listen there. Again, that's an easy way to go back and get past editions of both the newsletter and the programs that go with them. So John Michael DeMay, as you many of you know, John Michael has been a guest here on my radio program over the years. We first were introduced to each other by Gerhard Betting, by the way, who passed away. He was also a guest many times. Many of you know Gerhard. And Gerhard passed away not long ago. And today, actually, right now, as I speak, there is a memorial service going on for him in the town of Nelson. And I would be there if it weren't for this commitment. But Gerhard, wonderful guy. Anyway, he introduced John Michael and I. And John Michael DeMay and I had the idea to start an organization called Rise Up New Hampshire when the whole COVID thing first came down, when the COVID nonsense first came down, when all of a sudden everyone was gripped with fear and buying masks and washing their hands 100 times a day and not allowed to go to work. We went through a nightmarish time of lockdown and following ridiculous mandates, but we were alarmed. And we knew right away we smelled a rat, and we weren't taken in by the tomfoolery. But so we were really concerned about the kids. We were really concerned about the children and its effect on them. Number one, petrifying them that they're going to die or they're going to make somebody else die, not to touch anybody and not to get too close to anyone. And especially this whole, you know, not to be able to go to school. And the other thing was, a big thing was to wear this diaper on your face to cover up your face. And this was one of the very tragic and evil things that came from all of this. And this was this idea that we were so germ phobic that we were going to keep our faces covered. And of course it did nothing about germs, and it did really distance people because we couldn't see each other's expressions. We couldn't, had difficulty hearing one another. Well, I didn't, okay, because I didn't do this. I did wear a mask. One time I had to wear a mask going in to get some banking business done. We didn't mask here at the office, and I pretty much, my husband did the errands, and he masked when he went to the store. I didn't do very much of that. But this was really a very, very evil thing. And you see it still lingering out there, don't you? You see a lot of people still, and people who don't look sick. Like there's this one guy in town who's, you can be seen every day riding a bike, a young man with a mask on his face. I don't care what the temperature is, what's going on, but he's all by himself. He's outside and he's got a mask on. I see this actually more among young people than older people. And I think the whole intention to scare everyone, its success is demonstrated in that, right? Because people, young people, were really freaked out, and that was intended. So anyway, going back to John Michael and I and Rise Up New Hampshire. So we said, we've got to do something. We took out a big ad in the Monadnock Shopper, and it was about a half page ad, and it was about the children and the masking. And it was kind of getting across a different point of view. And in there, we started a survey about the masking of the children and whatnot. And that's how Rise Up New Hampshire was born. We corralled Dr. Jean Clerkin of Monadnock Natural Health and Johanna Laurie and Gerhard Betting. And then we had a couple of other founders, like Frank Natoli. And we started this, and John Michael Dumais became the hub of Rise Up New Hampshire. And he was not employed at the time and was able to devote a lot of time to developing this, to developing the website. And Rise Up New Hampshire became actually a very excellent resource for a place where people could go to find real information, because as you all know, there was so much censorship during that time, and you could spend hours trying to weed through all of the things saying the wrong things and lying to you to try to find a nugget of what was going on behind the scenes and what was really needed to be heard when it came to how you could prevent getting COVID and other things you could do, whether it be nutrients or whatever, showing that places in the world that didn't lock down were having better, all of that. And so John Michael was really behind all of that. And he is brilliant. He's an excellent writer. During this time, he was always looking for work. John Michael's background is in nonprofit organizations, and he's very, very excellent at that. But every place he interviewed required him to take the stance, to take the propaganda stand against COVID, and also to get the shots. And he wasn't going to do that. So he's been just really volunteering and donating so much of his time. But anyway, at this point in time, last Monday, July 3rd, he started his first day as news editor for Children's Health Defense. And, you know, I get goosebumps as I say that, because that's huge. Children's Health Defense, for those of us who have been like that, and many of my listeners out there I know right now, you know, you've been following all this stuff, and I spent a lot of time on the radio talking about these things back during that time. And Children's Health Defense is Robert Kennedy Jr., right, who's running for president in the primary against President Biden. And he is the person behind Children's Health Defense. And John Michael is So on, if you followed it, if you signed up for Rise Up New Hampshire and got his newsletters, his two newsletters weekly, I mean, he always had the cutting edge stuff of everything having to do with what's going on with all of this, whether it be talking about natural treatments or ivermectin or this or that or what, or the World Health Organization. I mean, everything, his finger on the pulse. I told him, you know, Children's Health Defense doesn't know how lucky they are. They do not know what they found. I do hope he doesn't burn out, because this is a very intense, very, very intense position that he has. But anyway, his first, and I had meant to put it in my newsletter today. I just ran out of time. I got going on my newsletter and I ran out of time, so I didn't get it on there. But I want to read to you his first article that he wrote that was published yesterday in Children's Health Defense electronic newsletter, which many of you get, I'm sure. So if you didn't see it, go to chd.com or whatever the URL is for them. I'm going to open this up right now, the PDF. And I want to read it to you, his article, because it's really good. And it's not just that he wrote it, but the information he's sharing here is super important. So again, 7/6 COVID news. So I guess this was on Thursday. So here we have, oh, and I love this, his little byline down here. John Michael DeMay is news editor for The Defender. He has been a writer and community organizer on a variety of issues, including the death penalty, war, health freedom, and all things related to the COVID-19 pandemic. You go, JM. So anyway, he's got a great article here, and this will take us back to our times when I was talking about this stuff a lot. And it's not that I'm not going to in the future. I am just in a particular series right now, but it says, so here we go. Prion disease and the mRNA shots, some light in the dark. In a June 20 Substack post, independent researcher Adam Gertner explained misfolding proteins and how they lead to prion disease. Though the current consensus holds prions to be nearly indestructible and unresponsive to any treatment, new discoveries offer cause for hope. And let me just plant a tidbit of suspense in there. Wait till you find out what that is. Oh, no, Becky, not that. Okay. By John Michael DeMay. All right. In a 2022 paper, Stephanie Seneff, I've talked about her many times here, just did recently with her stuff on sulfur, PhD, Peter McCullough, MD, MPH, and others discussed how the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines produce G quadruplexes and microRNAs that lead to prion disease. The effect becomes significantly worse after the second dose of the Pfizer shot. Prions are pathogenic agents that can induce the abnormal folding of cellular proteins, leading to diseases such as bovine spongiform encephalopathy, you know it as mad cow disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD, and Alzheimer's. In his June 20 Substack post, researcher Adam Gertner provides an accessible mini tutorial on the complex and inspirational nature of cellular proteins. He addresses the structure and functions of prions, the mechanism by which they form, and how they can wreak havoc on any organ, especially the brain. Prion disease can lead to a number of rare, progressive, neurodegenerative disorders such as dementia, ataxia, and spasticity before it becomes fatal, typically within just a few years of diagnosis. Gertner challenges the orthodoxy that there is no cure for prion disease by discussing several recent discoveries that offer some unexpectedly good news, quote unquote. And then there's a chart there that you can, well, you can't look at it because I didn't publish this in my newsletter. I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to have to circle back and do that next week, just so you can see that. But again, go yourself to Children's Health Defense and look it up. Just type in prion disease, John Michael DeMay. Further investigation into mRNA and Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, CJD. Gärtner began his research work into potentially useful therapeutics for prion disease and has also funded the development of a non-invasive prion blood test. Oh, very nice. He even undertook his own study of people who were diagnosed with or who died of CJD-like symptoms after receiving the parentheses, mostly Pfizer, mRNA jab. Nevertheless, he readily admits that he has yet to establish absolute proof of causation. There's our little disclaimer. In a European Union document related to the approval of the vaccine, Gärtner discovered that what could be a smoking gun. That is, the liquid nanoparticles used to encase the mRNA came primarily from cow fat. According to Gärtner, the document in question even admitted mRNA's potential to cause prion protein contamination. Nearly a year after Gärtner publicized his discovery, which convinced some but not all researchers, a paper by Jean-Claude Perez documented 26 cases of a new form of CJD. And I remember seeing this throughout the in the aftermath of the institution of these jabs, observed within a few days of the Pfizer, Moderna, or AstraZeneca vaccinations. Of these, 20 people died within less than 5 months of the injection. And if you've seen those stories, they're horrible. It is absolutely devastating. It's not like, okay, you know, less than 5 months of the injection, you're fine, and then you croak. It's like, it's really a bad, very bad scene. Think about like Alzheimer's progressing from nothing to very advanced in 5 months' time. Just think of it that way, is how I would think of it. At the time of the paper's publication, only one of the 26 had survived. The good news. While admitting that there is not ordinarily a whole lot of good news to be had concerning prion diseases, unquote, Gärtner outlined a mechanism by which, quote, residues on the spike protein bind to the many and varied amyloidogenic proteins, amyloid, right? Think amyloid plaque, think Alzheimer's. That's how we know that name, amyloid, if you know it. That's usually how you know it. Thus resulting in the blood clots observed by more than a few embalmers since the introduction of the mRNA shot. So those are related to this amyloid protein as well. He explained how this process can bind up the prionic protein. So what we essentially have here is, instead of a slightly cascading acopolypse buried deep inside parts of the brain that we will never reach, we likely instead have these long, stringy, vein-shaped agglomerations of the various amyloid proteins binding together wherever they meet and apparently at least somewhat resistant to being broken down by the body's natural processes for dealing with such eventualities, unquote. The quote-unquote really good news comes from the way ivermectin. Oh, that's horse paste, Becky. That's just horse paste. You must be stupid. Comes from the way ivermectin binds directly to the spike protein, which has itself been described as a prion-like protein, thus blocking the spike from connecting to the ACE2 receptor and, quote unquote, preventing the key from ever entering the keyhole. Horse paste? This isn't John Michael, this is me. I'm the horse paste interjector here. According to Gärtner, ivermectin also prevents the amyloidogenic aggregations to the spike protein, thereby arresting the production and proliferation of the prionic proteins. He adds, ivermectin is, without a shadow of a doubt at this point, a true miracle drug. With so many applications, from antiviral to cancer treatment to anti-inflammatory, and of course, in its originally recognized antiparasitic application, there should be little wonder why the powers that be have done their best to diminish it as horse paste. That is in the article, and that is quoting Gärtner. to diminish it to horse paste. This is Becky speaking. Does this not like just make you so angry that people in power don't want you to know how to be healthy? That should make everybody's blood boil. Gertner also notes that in a very unscientific poll he conducted on Twitter, 80% of respondents reported that a single low dose of ivermectin significantly improved brain fog, a common post-COVID-19 symptom. And I've actually done that here at Wondrous Roots with people. I have ivermectin and tablets. I don't use horse paste. And there's some good evidence to show as ivermectin will do similarly in other post-viral syndromes such as Epstein-Barr virus. He described a number of relevant investigational therapeutics for use against the spike protein and its effects, including serapeptase. Those of you who work with me know that I'm all about that, especially if you've had these shots. Serapeptase, quercetin, methylene blue, music to my ears, and resveratrol, some of which demonstrate a very broad range of useful actions. Again, these are all natural things. These are all tools in my toolkit. These are not tools in your doctor's toolkit. But isn't it nice to know that if you did get duped into getting these horrible shots, that you can do something about it after the fact? I think that's wonderful, and I think that's a really important takeaway. You aren't just left with whatever this stuff wants to do in you. We can do things about that. Back to Don Michael's article, expressing his belief that the lack of progress on therapeutics for neurodegenerative diseases is likely due to your run-of-the-mill pharma and charity corruption, Gertner nonetheless found cause for optimism. There's been a lot of progress on a lot of fronts, and more comes regularly as the world continues waking up, he said. So that's good news. And we've got some good news, and we have a lot of people coming to their senses, I believe, now that we are past wait, what did you do to me? What did you tell me? What wasn't true? Waking up. And that was our original role with Rise Up New Hampshire. And that was our original goal, I mean. That was how we saw ourselves, was being one of those voices speaking up. We're certainly not the only ones, but we wanted to do that in our community. John Michael's such a huge part of that. And Rise Up New Hampshire, we are still in force. We're not doing our regular Monday webinars, and we are not, John Michael's not producing the volume of newsletters he was doing before, but I certainly wish him well. I think he will be such an asset to Children's Health Defense, and I just couldn't be more proud of my buddy. So anyway, today I was going to continue on my series, Why Are We So Sick? I was thinking today, it would be so nice to maybe retitle that, or How Can We Be So Healthy? Wouldn't that be better? Maybe put a more positive spin on it instead of like, why are we so sick? How can we not be so sick? Or I don't know. But when I'm talking about this, it just all, dovetails with all of that. So let me also come to my, okay, I need to get back to my other, my Blog Talk Radio thing. So just bear with me for a second on that. I'm not sure how I lost that. Blog Talk Radio, let's go there and make sure I open my studio back up. So if you are trying to reach me, I can see that. I'm not sure exactly how I managed to close that out, but anyway, I'm back and we're good. All right, I can see that. All right, then I also want to make sure that I can see my emails. So just do this. Just bear with me. I'm doing all the stuff that I don't have anybody doing when I'm in the studio and somebody else is doing that for me. So let's just see. Okay. We're good. All right. Now, so anyway, from our toxic chemical-laden environment and food supply to commonplace nutritional deficiencies to the poor lifestyle habits of today, it's more of a question of why are we all not sick? And so I'm still dealing with nutritional deficiencies. The last time I did a live program was 2 weeks ago, and I talked about the B vitamins in general. And the B vitamins are so super, super important, and they are easily used up. So they're something we need to be getting in our diet. And diet is foundational. You can certainly take supplements, but the supplements were never intended to make up for a poor diet, right? So supplements are not like, oh, eat crap and then take your vitamins. Eat good food. Pay attention to your diet. Be really conscientious about getting a wide variety of nutrients in your food. And then use supplements to ensure that you're getting enough of these things. Because again, we've talked about, you know, the soils being nutrient deficient. We don't have foods today are not as nutritionally dense as they should be and as they were in yonder in former years. And so we have to, you know, use supplements. And again, sometimes we use supplements therapeutically to get nutrients in therapeutic form. But the food is the basis. So we're going to be talking today about vitamins B1, B2, and B6. I think following this, I'm going to move on from the Bs. I've talked about folate and B12 many times and really hit on those quite a bit in my last talk. But I want to move on and probably talk next time about I don't want to take them one by one and stretch this out over weeks, but I'm going to hit some of the major contaminant things we have in our environment today that are making it harder for us to be healthy. And then also, of course, along with those things, talk about how we can protect ourselves from them. So going to move on from there. And then what I would like to do is talk about, move on probably to another whole entire series, pulling apart different diseases, so-called disease conditions, one by one, and sort of going through them and what I recommend, how I see what we do, whether it be cancer or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or MS or diabetes or cardiovascular disease, different things. Just kind of take them chapter by chapter, if you will, and sort of put together a little program on those. So that's where I'm headed with all this. So I think I'm probably going to, even though there's more nutrients to talk about, I think I might just jump ahead and move on a little bit. But today, vitamin B2, I was going to do the whole thing on vitamin B2. And then I thought, no, I just kind of want to cram in a few more. So I have vitamin B2, B1 and B6 and more vitamin B rich recipes. These recipes I originally put in here as a, as B2 riboflavin rich recipes, but the B vitamins are seen in all of the same foods, you know, some more and others perhaps, but we're dealing with the same food groups. Luckily, they're delicious, wonderful food groups. So I'm going to go first to vitamin B2, top 15 vitamin B foods and their B2 foods and their benefits. I also had another, this is a Josh Axe page. I actually had another page that I wanted to focus on with him. I believe this is actually it. So from maintaining energy levels to optimizing heart health, riboflavin, otherwise known as vitamin B2, That's the one, by the way, when you take your vitamins, if you're taking your Thorn basic nutrients or you're seeking health multivitamin MF or your B complex that I've recommended you take, or if you're doing that out there, you know, nothing I recommended, but you're taking a vitamin and it's making your urine neon yellow, that is riboflavin. That's vitamin B2. And people have said to me, somebody said to me, I only take those once in a while because, you know, whenever I do, my urine is bright yellow. So I figure I don't need them. I'm just wasting them. That's just expensive urine. And I'm like, oh no, that's not the explanation at all. I don't care how well nourished you are. Your urine is going to be neon yellow if you take a vitamin B2 supplement. And it's doing you a lot of good while it's in your body, and it's doing you a lot of good as it's coming through your urinary tract. So don't think it means that you've got all the vitamins you need. It doesn't. Anyway, I digress. Food found in a variety of sources, including meat, dairy, and legumes. Consuming more riboflavin foods may even help ward off chronic disease, decrease the duration and severity of migraines, and it does that through boosting cellular energy, by the way. It is actually a very good approach to fighting migraine, along with other mitochondria-boosting nutrients, and maintain the health of your hair and skin. And we think of B vitamins, right, for skin and hair. We think of biotin, and that's important too, but all of these B vitamins, and we're going to find here as I read a little bit further, riboflavin also helps you make a better use of your other B vitamins, right? That's why I tell people, don't just take, I take folate. Or a lot. Sometimes I'll work with people and they take certain vitamins. They've been told or through the propaganda that multivitamins are a negative. So they take all of these individual vitamins, but oftentimes do not take like the full B complex, right? So I take B12 and C and E and D, somebody might say. Well, you don't want to take one of the B vitamins and not be sure you're getting the full B complex. They all work together, even though they have their own stellar in the spotlight kind of contributions, they work one with the other. That's super important. Fortunately, when we eat foods that are rich in one of the B vitamins, they're also rich in the other B vitamins. And so that makes, food. So that's what makes food nutritious. All right. Fortunately, getting enough riboflavin in your diet is easy and can be as simple as making a few strategic swaps in your meals. Here's what you need to know about this important water-soluble vitamin. Again, water-soluble vitamins, right? We need them every day. What you took in for a water-soluble vitamin yesterday does not last for today. This is something you need. It needs an ongoing. That's why you get hungry every day, right? It's not about just, filling our faces. This is about, appetite is about nourishing ourselves. Okay. You're meeting your needs by consuming some of the top riboflavin found foods around. So riboflavin, known as B2, water soluble, it works by helping the body utilize other B vitamins such as niacin and thiamine. Niacin is vitamin B3, one of the forms of B3, maybe I'll do sometime next time on vitamin B3. Okay, yeah, because I can't leave that one out. And thiamine. But then I'll move on, like I said. So we can produce energy from the foods that we eat. In particular, riboflavin functions as a main component of two important coenzymes in the body, known as flavin mononucleotide and flavin adenine dinucleotide. Each coenzyme, those foods taste good. Yeah, I really like salmon. Each coenzyme is involved in the production of energy, maintaining cell function, and promoting proper growth and development. They are also used for the conversion of tryptophan to niacin, which tryptophan being an amino acid, and the production of pyridoxal 5-phosphate from vitamin B6 foods. So we usually think of vitamin B6 in its pure state as pyridoxine, but when we have the the vitamin B2 present, it converts that pyridoxine to pyridoxal 5-phosphate, which is the active coenzymated form of vitamin B6. So anyway, riboflavin is also necessary for maintaining normal levels of homocysteine in the blood. We usually think of the B vitamins folate, B12 and B6 for that, but no, B2 plays a role in there as well. Homocysteine is a type of amino acid that may be involved in the development of heart disease. And I've talked about that before when I talk about folate defect problems, MTHFR, that homocysteine can be high. So it's also used to help treat lactic acidosis, a serious condition characterized by the buildup of lactate in the bloodstream and a decrease in pH levels. Oh, that was fun. I had someone in the other day, and we were talking about, she was asking me about something she saw on TV called, I think, pH 7 or something like that, which is to raise, you know, your pH to a more alkaline, healthy alkaline level. And it was really kind of funny because I looked at it and they were charging like a fortune for this thing, this product. And it basically was what you can do with baking soda and lemon. But I have these little strips here. So we checked our saliva, just it was like in the afternoon. We checked our saliva for our saliva pH at that moment, which is not the best time, always time to do it. But I was really impressed that mine was straight on. Where in the shade of green it was supposed to be. I was quite happy with that. And hers was looking good too. But anyway, so pH is an important thing. So I just digressed on that one. But anyway, studies show that riboflavin may promote heart health, prevent migraines. And again, that's ATP production, and even may even protect against cancer. And best of all, you know, it's found in those great foods. So here's the top, a few of the top riboflavin foods. There's actually 15 here. Beef liver, natural yogurt, and I eat a lot of that. We make that at home. I make that at home myself, make a Greek yogurt, wonderful milk, and I do drink a lot of milk. Spinach, almonds, sun-dried tomatoes, eggs, feta cheese, lamb, quinoa. I mean, just looking at those, if you like to cook, you can already think about has a zillion different little things going on in the back of your mind, things that could be made with these foods. Lamb, quinoa, lentils, mushroom, tahini, wild-caught salmon, and kidney beans. These are all yummy foods, foods that can be used to make a lot of yummy recipes. So may protect against cancer. Says here that one study, for example, showed that a higher intake of riboflavin was associated with a reduced risk of colorectal cancer, especially among those with the MTHFR genotype, which is a specific gene involved in the conversion of folate, which I talk about all the time. So if you know me and if you've worked with me, you know about something about MTHFR. Meanwhile, another small study analyzed the intakes of people in certain regions of Iran and concluded that riboflavin deficiency could be linked to nearly double the risk of developing esophageal cancer. And then we have provide migraine relief. Yes, blah, 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 blah. One review of 11 articles concluded that supplementing with riboflavin was effective at reducing the duration and frequency of migraine symptoms with minimal risks of side effects. Another study has similar findings showing that taking a high dosage of riboflavin cut migraine frequency in half and reduced the need for medication after just 3 months of treatment. Now, that high dose is 400 milligrams a day, if you want to know. Now, years ago, a woman came into my shop. In my practice, I was in Londonderry, New Hampshire at the time. This was probably in 2006. And she came in, she just, you know, walked in and she was complaining that she gets a migraine headache every single day. And I had some riboflavin on my shelf, but riboflavin normally comes in low doses, right? So not 400 milligrams. Although you can now sometimes find that. But mine was in 25 milligram tablets. So I told her, you know, you're going to have to take 16 of these a day to get the 400 milligrams. And she was aghast. She was outraged. She was like, you know, you would think I had said something really out of line, but she said, I can't take, and these are tiny tablets. There's no way I can take 16 tablets a day. And I didn't say it, but I felt like, well, have your lousy migraine every day. Yeah, I've never had a migraine. I'm glad because I know a lot of migraine sufferers, and they are really bad, bad headaches. So anyway, it does that. And you know, I just had my hair done yesterday, and Kelly, right at Platinum Hair Studios in Keene, who does my hair, said to me, she showed me some supplements that a healthcare practitioner had recommended to her daughter for her migraines. And whoa, riboflavin was there, magnesium was there, coenzyme Q10 was there. There were a couple others, the ones that boost mitochondrial energy. And this healthcare practitioner was her person who oversees her birth control medication or something like that, or hormonal stuff. And I was so impressed because usually mainstream doctors don't understand the mitochondrial energy relationship to migraine. And this doctor clearly did. And I was like, hooray. I was like, I said, yeah, those recommendations are spot on. I was thrilled. Okay. Maintain healthy hair and skin. As the most abundant protein in your body, collagen makes up a large portion of your muscles, skin, bones, joints, hair, and nails. Because riboflavin plays a role in regulating collagen levels in the body, and I did not know that. I didn't know that until I was reading this. Well, I read it earlier, but I didn't know it had anything to do with collagen. Including plenty of foods rich in riboflavin in your diet could keep your hair and skin healthy. Studies show that collagen can help improve skin elasticity and moisture. Research also shows that collagen could benefit hair health as well, with one animal model reporting that collagen was effective at promoting hair growth in mice. Oh, wow. I'd love to see that hairy mouse. Anyway, yeah, people, these are common complaints today. And a lot of it, I think, goes to iodine deficiency and to thyroid, thyroid problems. But a lot of people with hair and skin issues, really an epidemic of what do I do about my hair? I'm losing my hair. What do I do about my skin? So here, let's not ignore the B vitamins. And here we're talking about riboflavin, vitamin B2. Promoting heart health by lowering homocysteine. We talked about that. One animal model published in Heart International, for instance, showed that riboflavin treatment helped improve heart function in rats with heart failure caused by diabetes. Meanwhile, other studies have also found that riboflavin deficiencies are more prevalent in people with heart disease. And deficiency could be linked to a higher risk of congenital heart defects. Acts as antioxidants. You know, we tend to think of, motorcycle action out there. Vitamin C and E and A as antioxidants, vitamins with antioxidant properties. But in particular, studies show that B2 riboflavin, lipid peroxidation, and reperfusion oxidative injury, both of which can damage your cells and contribute to chronic disease. So lipid peroxidation, right? The going rancid of fats in your body is basically what that means. And reperfusion oxidative injury is like when somebody has a stroke and those areas of the brain have been deprived of blood flow and now the blood flow is coming back. You can have injury to that. For that, I always recommend that brain form of magnesium L-threonate. But here we see, you know, if you've had, and these nutrients also can help prevent stroke, you know, be sure you're getting your get your nutrients as strong as you can in there and get past over that hump and get your brain back to functioning the way it's supposed to. Signs of vitamin B2 deficiency. It says here riboflavin deficiencies alone are very rare. Instead, their deficiencies are often coupled with deficiencies in other water-soluble vitamins such as thiamine, vitamin B1, and niacin, vitamin B3. Alcoholics are at a greater risk of deficiency due to both a decreased intake and also impaired vitamin absorption. And additionally, individuals who don't consume meat or dairy And those with dietary restrictions may be at an increased risk. And let's think about that today, because we've got a big push here from some not so savory sources. I mean, when we're getting pushed towards a plant-based diet, the major thrust of that push today, like today, July 8th, is not coming from nutritionists. It's coming from climate control people and, you know, crickets and all this kind of stuff. And we've got, like in New York City right now, we're talking about having footprints for people. Not their carbon footprint, but tracking what people are buying for groceries. This has been proposed by the World Health Organization in New York. I think right now you can't get animal-based foods if you're in an institution or in school lunches or hospitals. It's if you ask for it, but the main things are going to be plant-based. So, you know, there we go, another hoorah of nonsense. But a lot of people don't consume meat or dairy. And anyway, so you got to make sure you're getting your B2 and the other Bs too. Anyway, some of the most common riboflavin deficiency symptoms include a sore throat, cracks in the lips and corners of the mouth, otherwise known as chelosis, swollen tongue, scaly skin, redness of the lining of the mouth and throat, and weakness. Getting more. So I'm going to go to some recipes here. And I said I was going to talk about three of the B vitamins today. I really have not done that. But in my newsletter, you can get the skinny on those other ones too. But I feel like maybe it's because it's like lunchtime. Lemon, sun-dried tomato, and almond quinoa salad. So all of those sun-dried tomatoes, I don't know so much about lemon, but quinoa and almonds are all in the high B2 foods. They're all high in riboflavin. And this is just really nice. This would be a great something for here in the summer. You've got olive oil, yellow onion, quinoa, water, apple cider vinegar, so good for you, lemon juice, salt, pepper, sun-dried tomatoes, flat-leaf parsley, almonds, and that looks and sounds really good to me. Deviled eggs with avocado to fire up fat burn, it says here. And so that's just really simple, eggs with avocado, salt, pepper, garlic, chili powder, cumin, paprika, cilantro, lime. That looks really good, very nutritious. You eat eggs, you're getting so many nutrients, not just B vitamins, that's for sure. I really liked this one, liver and wild mushrooms, and I definitely want to try this. We like liver, but just like you, even if you like liver, you probably don't think about it very much when you're planning supper. I don't. This looks super good. It comes from the UK, so it's written in the, you know, the different measuring things. But anyway, you start with lard. Or dripping, and animal lard is actually really good for you. And then you have a 5-ounce lobe of free-range pork liver. Okay, but you could do this with beef liver too. A shallot, some wild mushrooms. So this person says horn of plenty or penny buns. I don't even know if we have those around here, but we have plenty of great wild mushrooms. And you can get Witchland Farm. This one place, and they stock at the co-op, Monadnock Co-op right here in Keene. I'm sure you can get them wherever you are, some good wild mushrooms, or just use whatever mushrooms you have. And of course, these recipes are always meant to be changed to suit your fancy. Butter, onion, garlic, thyme, a thyme sprig, 2 sage leaves. We have thyme and fresh sage in our garden at the present moment. Some dry sherry, white wine, chicken stock, and double cream. That sounds so good. So most people think, well, if I eat liver, it's going to be liver and onions and bacon. Well, that's good too. But there's so many more things you can do with liver. So just keep that in mind. And One skillet salmon with fennel and sun-dried tomatoes. So again, this is like another really good chock full. That looks super delicious. And I love one skillet dinners, especially on a weeknight. So you have salmon, salt, pepper, sun-dried tomato pesto, and then extra virgin olive oil, two medium fennel bulbs, a cup of Israeli couscous, which I really love that Israeli couscous. It's not like real mini. It's like they're like little tiny balls. They're delicious. In fact, we had them the other night with a one skillet chicken dish with then scallions, chicken broth, green olives, toasted pine nuts, and garlic. That sounds fantastic. And then beef and broccoli with the best sauce, it says here. And that one is flank steak, olive oil, broccoli, sesame seeds, ginger, garlic, water, tamari, light brown sugar. I probably would use maple syrup, cornstarch, black pepper, and sesame oil. So we've got kind of a nice stir fry there. That looks really yummy to me. These are all, this is how you eat well and you nourish yourself at the same time. So we are coming up on the time to close this top 15 thiamine foods, vitamin B1. Let's see how this actually measures up comparatively. I bet we're going to find similar foods. And what are they? They are nutritional yeast. Oh, we had that last night on popcorn. You know, brewer's yeast, nutritional yeast, that's a great source of all of the B vitamins. I think the one that it's lacking in is B6, but all of the rest of them, seaweed, sunflower seeds, macadamia nuts, black beans, lentils, edamame, okay, so the, you know, the soybeans that you steam or whatever, navy beans, white beans, a lot of legumes, green split peas, pinto beans, mung beans, asparagus, beef liver, Brussels sprouts. Those are all rich in vitamin B1. And again, a lot of overlap. And when you make things together, you have a lot of different nutrients all melding in there. Let's see, vitamin B6 benefits the brain, the heart, the eyes, and more. And let's see what those top foods are for vitamin B6. If I can find that here, I should be able to. Turkey breast, grass-fed beef, pistachios, tuna, pinto beans, avocado, chicken breast, blackstrap molasses, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds. And then there's some recipes there. You can get to these through my newsletter if you go to that one, crockpot beef and broccoli, cranberry and pistachio bliss balls, salted paleo sun butter cups, strawberry avocado salad, cashew chicken lettuce wraps, right? Nutrition and taking your vitamins can be absolutely delicious. Some of the top things that, that vitamin B6 can do for you: maintain healthy blood vessels, support brain function, may improve mood, helps treat anemia, protects eye health, may reduce symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis, could help lower blood pressure, relieves PMS symptoms, reduces morning sickness and nausea, regulates sleep cycles, helping the body make melatonin, prevents kidney stones. B6 along 90 seconds. So I think I'm going to say have a wonderful weekend. I'll be back next week talking more things, all your health and mine. And I hope you have a great weekend and week in the meantime. And we'll talk soon.